Now, I'm guessing that this has happened to a lot of you. I'm hoping it's happened to a lot of you. I've shared this story with people, and some of them have done it. When I first got married, I wasn't very financially savvy, okay? And so I got a phone call one afternoon. I was home alone. Diane was at work. I didn't get a call to substitute teach, so I was sitting around. Got a phone call, and this lady on the phone says, for $39.95, okay, now this is before emails, before faxes, before anything else, cell phones, but for $39.95, I could have $600 worth of stuff. I could get a vacation, plane ticket, and hotel. I was floored. I got on the phone with Diane at the bank. Diane, you are not going to believe this, but I need the account number to get to the bank. Now, she's a lot sharper than I am, and she, loving wife, she tried so hard to talk me out of it, but she didn't. We bought one of those books. Now, I know some of you use it for fundraising, those $39.90 Solano County. Like, I'm not banging on that, but, you know, I just got sucked into that thing. I was just so excited. I was beside myself. We were newly married, and it's like, Diane, we can take a flight. Nothing panned out. Nothing. I called the number, no answer. We got the book. Most stuff I didn't need. 99% of it I did not need. And it just ended up being a horrible, horrible situation. She just loves me so much, she let me go ahead and buy it. But she knew. Riches are deceitful. Now, right out of the gate, I want to start off with a passage from 1 Timothy chapter 6. It's right there in your notes if you want to bust out your notes. Also, just as a reminder, if you want to keep that care card beside you, I might be saying several points during the sermon to mark some things that you're thinking about that you'd like to have us send you. So kind of keep that handy, that care card, to mark next steps and things that you, information that you'd like to have. In this first passage, 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 17, command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Now, I want to point out very quickly before I launch into our three bullet points in this sermon, but I want to make 3 points from this passage alone. You don't have this in your notes. This is a freebie, so you get your pen ready. 3 things. Number one has to do with that very opening line, command those who are rich. Last week, if you were here, you found out something. You are rich. Good news and bad news, okay? You have responsibilities, okay? And again, I know everybody's going home and thinking, because of who we're hanging with and our neighbors and everything, we're like, well, we don't feel rich. They have a newer car than we do. You know, and you get into this comparing game. But the fact is as we found out last night, we are rich. So when it says, command those who are rich, they're talking to you and me. They're not talking to some nebulous rich people out there. It is us. It is us. Second thing I want to point out is that he tells them not to be arrogant in their wealth. Don't pretend like your wealth was 100% earned. This arrogance that they have, that talks about in that verse, is really an arrogance directed straight at God. This arrogance says to God, I did all of this with no help from you. Therefore, this is important, I'll decide when enough's enough. I'll decide what to spend and when. And I'll decide how much and when to give back. See, that's the arrogance that wealth leads us to. Hey, I did all this. I worked hard for it. And then it just twists our views on everything, this arrogance. And then number three, based on this opening passage, is that Paul warns Timothy to warn the people who are wealthy, us, to not to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain. Now, this is important to understand right from the get-go, because let me give you a riddle. You do it to others, others do it to you, they do it to themselves, and you do it to yourselves. What is it? What is it that we all do to each other? Here's the deal, and here's what this passage is talking about. We look at each other, and we make a judgment call based on how much stuff they have. Oh, they must be smarter than me. And the wealthy person is looking the other way and thinking, well, you're not as smart as me because obviously you don't have as much stuff as I have. Okay? Or I worked way harder, and I look at your house, and you obviously haven't worked very hard. You know, and we get this incredible arrogance that all of our wealth that might have come from, you know, it probably did come from some hard work, okay? But it creates this incredible arrogance where because of our wealth, we look down our nose at everybody else. I'm not worth this much, or I'm worth this much, but you're not because I got more stuff than you. Now, ordinarily, this would be okay. But in our society, matching an X amount of income with what you do can get pretty wild. It gets pretty out there. Now, for the most of us, there was a connection between how much you put in and how much you're currently making, a rough connection. But if you look out over across our society, man, it can get out of whack entirely. It can get crazy. Now, I heard an interview with J.K. Rowling, I think that's the correct way to say that, and I wanted to bring up another point on that. She said something really interesting. And I've been reading some autobiographies of some very, very wealthy musicians, and they all say the same thing. If you look at her and you look at how much she made billions. She's a billionaire. And I think about this, and I'm okay with it to a certain degree. But when anybody in that situation gets to the point where because I've made billions, I can get up on a stage and soapbox and tell everybody what to do. It just leads this, and you see this in celebrities. I don't know, I never knew what bugged me so much about it. I mean, I always felt like, well, they have every right. They got a lot of money, and, you know, go for it. But I think I figured out this week what bothered me so much is that they equated their wealth that they got through hard work, through their musical abilities, acting abilities, but I think they got a little bit of excess simply because there's so many people that want what they had. At a certain point, the equation gets out of whack. The effort they put in and what they got out of it is incredible. And it somehow leads them, as it does some of us sometimes with our friends, well, I've got wealth, I've got stuff, therefore I'm in a position to tell you what to do. I'm better than you. I place my trust and my faith in wealth. And it just leads to this incredible arrogance. It just doesn't work out. So, three things from those passages. We are rich, God's behind it all, and your wealth will only make you as great as the amount that you eventually give back. So let's get started. Right there in your notes, the very first bullet, I believe, is Satan wants you to serve money. I believe that's a blank to fill in there. Satan wants you to serve money. Now, Matthew 6:24 says, no one can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. Now, this is something really interesting. I listened to a podcast a while back, and this guy was talking about companies who make a list of their values. I'm sure a lot of your companies, you've gone through and sat in through some long meetings and values clarification, and you came up with a list of these are the guiding principles and the guiding values of our company or my family or whatever. A lot of you have seen this. Now, what this guy said, it took me back. He said, it's great to have a list of priorities, but if you make a list of priorities, you have fallen far, far short. What you need to do with that list of goals and values in your life is to prioritize them. For example, you can have success as a value in your company, and you can have honesty as a value in your company. But as your company goes down the road and you come and a certain situation comes up and you have a decision, well, if I do this, it's going to be a little bit shady, but success is one of the values of my company, so I'll go ahead and do it. See, and this is what this passage is driving at. If you have a lot, we have values. We make our lists. But we really do need to prioritize these values and put godliness at the very top. Everything else flows after godliness because you simply can't serve both God and money. About 3 years ago, I delivered a sermon. I want to take you back for just one aspect of it. I talked about the two trees in the Garden of Eden. One tree was the tree of life. There were no restrictions there. The other tree was the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. That was the only tree that Adam and Eve were asked not to touch. And as I allowed this to unfold and as I looked into it and shared with you, we discovered that the tree of the knowledge of good and evil is there for a reason. It really does give us dignity. Okay, because God gives us freedom to make a choice, but there's got to be this other choice. Otherwise, it's really not a choice at all. Okay, so we've got this tree, the knowledge of good and evil, and what do Adam and Eve immediately do is they touch the one thing they weren't allowed to touch. And this is really the heart of what I want to say today. As soon as they started grasping at the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, see, that was God's prerogative. That was like God's stash, storehouse of good stuff that he's the one, because he knows good and evil. From that tree, he would dish out what we needed. And it really becomes the fruit of the tree of life. But when we take from that tree, everything that we grasp, not in its time, not in the right amount, not for me, it was never meant for me, we grasp, and that tree becomes our God. That tree, every time we make a decision, every time we look at our money and we say, you know what, God's got this, the tree of life, and he's got all these blessings, but you know, what if he's not on his game today? I'm going to go ahead and make some decisions. I'm going to start grabbing from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. I'm going to start making some decisions on my own. And see, and here's the deceitfulness of money. Money is the opportunity for each one of us to say, God, I don't need you anymore. I've got money. I can purchase my happiness. I can purchase my relationship. I can purchase. We think this. With money, I can make all these. God, I don't need you. I don't need the tree of life. I got the tree of knowledge of good and evil. I can just take when I want, if I want, how much I want. And that's the deceitfulness, the incredible deceitfulness of money. Like most things from God, if it's grasped, it's ruined. But when he gives it in his timing with outstretched hands, it's beautiful and it's real and it's lasting. I want to take you back just very quickly to one other sermon I preached a long time ago. It was the difference between men and women. And one of the attributes that God gave men in too much abundance, maybe, is this idea that they are initiators. Men are initiators, okay? And what this does, and we looked at, I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but porn, you did read that carefully, correctly. Porn, it's not corn, it's not anything else. Porn Sunday is coming up first Sunday in February. But what we looked at when I was doing this sermon is this initiation, this initiating principle that men have in them, that God gave them, this stamp, leads them to grasp at the tree of the things that the tree of the knowledge of good and evil have, always grasping, always getting ahead of himself. And this is one of the dangers. This is pornography is a indication of that. It is people who decided, you know, I don't want to go through the time and the effort and the compromise and all this kind of stuff to have a loving relationship. I'm just going to do a quick end around. I'm going to skip God and I'm going to skip all of the relational stuff. I'm going to just do a quick end around and get the sex. Without all the stuff that should have been there to make it as beautiful as it could be, I'm going to do a quick end around. See, and money does the same thing for many of us. It's an attempt to do an end around God. And it's just something that we have to be careful and we have to be aware of. When you get to that point where I have enough and suddenly you get a bunch of money in your hands and your first thought is, oh man, I can purchase happiness. I can do this. Forget about the bills. I can purchase happiness. It's just a wild, wild thought that I don't think is very accurate. Now listen to this as I read this next passage from 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 10. And I want you to be thinking Garden of Eden and Adam and Eve taking from what they weren't supposed to take because they didn't trust God to give them what they needed. They wanted to take control by themselves. For the love of money, and put in parentheses there, taking rather than receiving, or greed. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Some people, eager for money, greedy, have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many, many griefs. Now, you notice it doesn't say for the love of happiness or for the love of joy or for the love of a lack of problems or for the love of any of these other kind of things. It's okay to go for those kind of things. But if the problem is for the love of money, as if money could purchase those things. And really, for the love of more than I deserve, more than I need. That's what that passage is saying. for the love of me being the top guy on the block, for the love of everybody looking at me and going, wow, for the love of all that, all sorts of problems, a life pierced with all sorts of griefs. Because I thought about this. You think about, we're in a day and age where most of our stuff is done electronically. We really don't see wads of cash in our hands very often anymore. It's either in the form of a check or the credit card. But to bust out a big old wad of bills, now just think about that a moment. What happens in your mind when you suddenly have a whole pile of money? I'll tell you what went through my head immediately, and I think that goes through a lot of our heads, is we use money correctly. We use it to pay our bills, to take care of our needs, to get our food, to cover the shelter, to, you know, all these kind of things. But whenever we suddenly get a windfall, a tax break, a gift, where does our head automatically go immediately? Your brain immediately leaves need and jumps right into want. Ooh, I can purchase future happiness. That's really what you're thinking. It's like, oh my, and then you try to stash it somewhere because that's going to be your, you're going to buy future happiness. It's not, it doesn't matter how many bills you had, how many needs there are in your church or in your neighborhood or in your family. Suddenly, when you somehow get something that you know you didn't work for, it suddenly just arrived windfall, our heads just go to excess. Automatically, excess. Instead of, I wonder who this was supposed to go to. Apparently God stuck it in my hand. I don't need it. It's excess. I wonder who I was supposed to give this to. I think something we just need to wrestle just a little bit with. Okay, I'm going to go through our three bullets here, all right? You ready? This is kind of a self-quiz for y'all. As you look at these three points, you can answer for yourself. Do I love money more than God? Have I made or am I in danger of making money my God in place of my God? So people who love and trust money, two caveats before I get started. Number one, just kind of a reminder here, is we are rich. Okay, I just want to make that really clear. Before we start, we are rich, comparatively speaking. John talks a lot about this. Let's just admit it and be okay with that. Second thing, if you guys have seen the movie, It's a Wonderful Life. And George Bailey, Jimmy Stewart, is having a conversation with Clarence, the angel. And if you remember the movie Jimmy Stewart, George Bailey has lost $8,000 and there's going to be scandal and he's kind of freaking out. And he asks, he's figuring out that Clarence is from heaven. He's not sure, but this guardian angel of his. And he says, you know, the angel says, well, how can I help you? I'm your guardian angel. He says, well, I need a lot of money, $8,000. Oh, Clarence started laughing. Oh, we don't need money where I come from. And George Bailey says something that we just want to be honest about with right here, right now. He says, well, money sure helps around here, bub. Okay, so right there, I'm not pie in the sky in it here, okay? Money comes in handy around here, bub. It really does. But let's just look at and think about this. What happens and how does it happen that we go into the excess? Okay, so number one, in your notes, number one, how can you tell if you are beginning to love money more than God? Number one is enough, right in the blank, you will never have enough. You will never have enough, blank number one. Ecclesiastes 5, this is Solomon saying, whoever loves money never has money enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with his income. Let me ask you a question. Do you know how much money you need to be totally secure? Have you talked to your brokers and your husbands and your wives? Do you have that dollar figure? How much money do you need to have to be totally secure? Anybody know the answer to that? I'll tell you what the answer is. It's the same for all of us. It's more than you currently have. I'm fairly certain that is every single person in this room. How much money do we need? A lot more than what I got right now. And that is the beginning of the trap. Here's the question that we need to ask ourselves. Are you truly satisfied with your salary and your possessions? Why or why not? See, in this passage, Solomon is saying, hey, look, the more things you get, the more time you spend not only
acquiring them, making sure that you've got the best, then you got to protect it, then you got to take care of it. And as we all find out, every single expensive item that we buy, the upkeep is 10 times worse than the original purchase. I don't care if it's your TV, your radio, your little transistor radio, your HD computers. Oh my goodness, you see it in the newspaper, only $399. Whoa, that's an awesome deal. But then when you add on everything else, you're looking at $900 and something. And then 1 year later, you got to add all this other stuff to it. Unending trap. Okay, so Solomon just makes this great point. It says, whoever loves money never has enough, and whoever loves wealth is never, ever satisfied. Take a look at Proverbs 18, and I think this is really what I'm driving at here. The wealth of the rich is their fortified city. They imagine, and I think that's circled, if not circle it a bunch of times, this is so important. They imagine, and you can just see the mindset. I can see it in myself. I can see it in thoughts that I've once had about cars that I've owned and my house, and when I had my bedroom out in the garage, I thought about this. I imagine my wealth to be an unscalable wall. If I have money, nothing can touch me. I am invincible. I can purchase my way out of any situation. There's a great movie, I don't know if any of you guys saw it, it's from way back, The Panic Room. Okay, a wealthy lady, and I saw parts of it, so if I mess it up, just go with me. Just this idea that she had a lot of wealth and she had a lot of fear. And I'm not sure what she was afraid of. I'm not really even sure if she had a lot of wealth. But she built this panic room so that nothing, if anything happened, she would just whoom. And that's, I think, exactly what we think about with our money. If I can just get enough in the bank, and I'm going to work toward it, work toward it, work toward it, I can just get enough in the bank, nothing can touch me. My wife will not leave me. My kids will not hate me. Those have nothing to do with money, you guys. Absolutely nothing to do with money. The key is what the money represents, and this is the whole garden. The ability to choose from whom you will receive life's blessings. When we end up with too much money, a little bit of excess, we really do say to God, take a break. Got it covered. Don't need you. That's why Jesus even said, it's impossible for a rich man to get into heaven. But with God, anything is possible. So in a nutshell, if you've got money, and we do, your spirituality is going to be a task because you have a huge temptation sitting in your pocket all the time because we live in America, North America. That's just our bag. That's our burden. What do we do with all this money? Stand around feeling guilty, collect up more stuff? I mean, what do we do with it all? But we need to be careful. Wealth is incredibly deceitful. See, each of us really have now two choices. How are we going to achieve happiness? Will we achieve it through our relationships, our accomplishments, who we are, whose we are? Will we get our joy in life from the tree of life? Or will we try to accumulate so much money now in the hopes of purchasing or securing all these things in some magical future later? See, and that's the trap. That's one of the traps of wealth. Spend all of our time and effort saving it up so one day I can prove to my wife and kids I love them. I can show them because I'll buy them tons of stuff. And that magical future later just, it never happens. It never happens. Because, well, you don't have enough yet. I'm almost there. I'm almost there, son. I don't have enough yet. And this belief that the money can go and we can actually purchase these things. The reality is money can't buy any of these things. It's all an illusion. Money can't cure diseases. It can help in the research, but your personal bank account is not going to cure a disease. It doesn't nourish relationships. It doesn't heal broken marriage. It doesn't keep kids off drugs. In fact, if money is an issue in your marriage, I would suggest, I'm not positive, that it's really not a money of issue. It's not an issue of money. It's more an issue of trust between the two of you. And on top of that, how much do the two of you trust God with the finances? I think that's probably the issue. It's not the money. Money is just the indicator that two people aren't working together. They don't have common goals. That's probably the issue that you need to look at instead of going out and working more and collecting more money, and hopefully this finance problem will go away. It's not a finance problem. It's a trust problem. Do each of you trust each other? And as a pair, do you trust God to help you make these financial decisions? Second, how do you know that you love money too much and you trust money too much? People who love and trust money, number 2, have money in the bank but no peace in their hearts. Money in the bank but no peace in their hearts. They have a boat in the garage but no peace in their hearts. They have a BMW but no peace in their hearts. I'm not bagging on any of you if you have any of these things. Okay, I'll throw out another one. If you have 27 pairs of shoes in your closet but you don't have peace in your heart. So again, the question at this point is, in what ways does money and possessions complicate our life? How many of you have heard of George Carlin? No, I'm not going to show you a video because he just cusses too much. But he does have one. It's called, and in my mind I'm thinking, I bet you it's called something else and they dubbed it. But it's really called Stuff. How many of you have heard it? Just raise your hand. Okay, for those of you who haven't heard it, in a nutshell, he just says, you know what we are? We are stuff collectors. We collect so much stuff that we actually end up buying bigger houses just to hold our stuff. And he goes on and says, when we go on a vacation, we buy locks and put security things to guard our stuff. And when we get too much stuff, we get storage containers to hold our stuff. And then when we go on a vacation, we have to decide, you know, what stuff do I take and what stuff do I... And he just goes on and on and on, and he just makes it so clear that our stuff rules our lives. Our stuff, taking care of it, collecting it, making sure it doesn't collect dust, get rusty, doesn't get stolen, all these kind of things that God clearly knew, you know, treasures not in heaven are going to rust. Moths are going to eat it. Thieves are going to steal it. Okay? Many of us in this room, as I posted on Facebook yesterday afternoon, some of these questions just to see what people were thinking. And wide range of economic expertise, I noticed as I read everybody's posts. My particular banking experience was the first Bureau Bank of Escondido. I grew up in Escondido. Happened to have a branch on my street, the Via Veneto branch. And it was really cool because it was easy to make deposits, easy to make withdrawals, unless my mom was in the room and she saw me getting into my dad's underwear drawer, because that was the first Bureau Bank of Escondido. Okay, that's where I kept my money. That's how I made my car payments, my insurance payments. And, you know, there was always this thing, well, why are you in Dad's underwear drawer? Underwear drawer, man, I'm making a deposit in the bank. Go away. This is private stuff. Now, and then I heard from some of you when you answered some of my questions, you were talking about investment opportunities and stocks and bonds. And I was like, wow, I'm just at a different place than many of you. But when it comes to possessions, and having money in the bank but no peace in our heart, what I noticed more than anything else on all of these Facebook postings, they all said basically the same thing. There's not enough room. If I collect up more and more stuff, all I got to do is dust it. We have to have a 4-bedroom instead of a 3-bedroom just to hold on to our stuff. See, here's a catch. The deceitfulness of money, it's the idea or promise of what money will deliver. It's not really the money itself. And half the time, how many of you have ever gone to Chuck E. Cheese? And you start doing those whole ticket things, and pretty soon, you've shelled out a lot of money. And what's weird is you never really, while you're doing it, you haven't gone over to the glass display case yet. You haven't. At that point, you don't even care. All you know is you're collecting up these tickets, and in your mind, I'm going to be able to purchase happiness. And you get all caught up in it, and the money's going out. And again, you haven't even thought about what your money, which are the tickets at this point, you haven't even given it a thought as to what you're going to purchase. But you're convinced that it will, whatever it is, it will make you happy. Isn't that weird? You don't even give it a thought. So after spending $70, $80, and you go over there, and you end up with a paddle ball that costs 99 cents down there, and you just paid $72.50 for it. The deception of money, as if money could achieve these things. Take a look at Proverbs 15:16. Better a little with the fear of the Lord than great wealth with turmoil. Now, fear of the Lord, real carefully there. Let me re-say this then. Better a little while being led by the Lord than great wealth with all of its turmoil with you in charge of your stuff. See, my mom and dad were real smart right at the beginning. They knew early on they hated owning stuff. So growing up, we all had jobs. We, the four kids, took care of everything. Mom cooked. Dad made money. From my recollection, they didn't do much else around the house. I hope they're not going to listen to this. They both hated owning a home because of the upkeep. So they told us, when you graduate, have your act together, because as soon as the youngest one graduates, we are selling the home. We hate owning a home. And they did. In 1983, my younger sister graduated from high school. They sold the home. If any of us did not have our stuff together, there was no home to go back to. See, some of you guys need to be thinking about this. You know, your kids are getting, you know, like, what are you still doing in the basement? Just let them know, hey, we're selling the house. Get a date and don't tell them where you're buying your next house. Just an idea. I don't know if you guys have ever visited an opulent house, one that just screams, don't touch anything. And you sit there and just nerve-wracking. You've been in other houses where you just feel the house screaming out, hey, run to the fridge, grab what you want, and grab a seat in front of the TV. You know, the house just says that. It's a happy place. And it's almost as if in our homes, we collect stuff to put in our homes as our proof to our neighbors that we are, in fact, happy and well-off and all together. And because we don't feel we are, we keep buying more and more and more and more, and it becomes this funny little, my dad's bigger than your dad. I got more money than you have. I am better than you. Let me give you a solution, because here's really the issue as I talk to my wife. The issue is, who are you hanging out with? If you're hanging out with wealthy people, you're going to feel very unwealthy. If you're hanging out with very, very, very poor people, you're going to feel fairly wealthy. They did a couple studies, and my wife was telling me about one, and they compared people who made $50,000 with people who made $75,000, and they figured out that their difference of happiness, there's no difference. No difference. No difference whatsoever. They did a study, and they looked at citizens of Mexico, a very poor country, and they compared it to citizens of Luxembourg, which is a country in Europe. Their average per capita income is $55,000. The average per capita income in Mexico is $10,000. And they found out, guess who was happiest? Okay, they were close. They were right around the same. I tricked you. But they were the same. Five times the amount of income, and they were just the same. And I think it really is a matter of who you're hanging out with. If you want to run in certain circles, you get caught up in this trap of, I've got to have more stuff because that's the circle I want to run in. I want to be respected like them. So, and here's the solution. Start going down at least once a week and hang out at Mission Solano. Once a week. Go down to Heather House. Go down to any of a dozen different places in this city and hang out there, and you will quickly, your whole attitude will be turned upside down, because you will suddenly realize, wow, I am blessed. I am blessed. But the more often you sit in your home, watch International House Hunters, watch HGTV, I do too, it's like, I gotta have that because that's so cool looking, and people would be so amazed, and they think I'd be so this, that, and you get caught up in this crazy job. Number three, last indicator, if you're serving money more than God, is you find it increasingly difficult to give big. Remember our key verse. At the end of it says, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God. What this is saying by putting their hope in God is that Paul is telling Timothy to tell us, do good things. That's your treasure. It's not wealth, because that's deceitful. Do good things and you will feel rich. As you read the passages, verses 18 and 19, after that opening passage, it really makes clear that these guys, Paul is telling Timothy, don't let the rich people put all of their faith in their money. Put their faith in the good deeds that they do. Those are the treasures in heaven that are going to count. So the question becomes, how does the fear of not having enough impede your ability or willingness to give? One of the really good Facebook posts that I got from, I think, Cheryl, she says this, I give what I can, when I can, whether I can. And that last phrase really caught my attention. See, because we have a disease here in America. It's called when I syndrome. You guys know what when I syndrome is? Okay. When I finally pay off the student loan, when I finally pay off the car, when I finally get the new washer and dryer, when I finally, and this is Satan's, one of his really good tricks, when I finally, I'll do it. But this Facebook posting, I'll give what I can, when I can, whether I can. It's an automatic thing. Now I want you to read this last passage. This is so important, and this is your solution to the problem of the more you make. I know not all of us are in that boat right now, but we've been there. You've risen up at one point. At a certain point, the statistics say as your income goes up, your percentage, total percentage of your giving actually goes down. The dollar figure will probably stay the same. That's the weird thing. You keep going up in income, but percentage-wise, it starts going down. Why do we do this? It's almost like we fully believe that when an opportunity comes to give, if we give some of our excess, we're actually giving away our future happiness. And we're like, no, because I had control of it a minute ago, and now I got to give it to you. And there's that deceitfulness of wealth. It didn't come from the money. It's not going to come from the money. It simply will. It can't come from the money. Satan says, give when. And God says, give whether. Whether you can or not. So my solution is this. Begin, just like in this passage, let me read it to you. Out of the most severe trial, this is 2 Corinthians chapter 8, out of the most severe trial, their overflowing joy and extreme poverty welled up in rich generosity, for I testify that they gave as much as they were able and even beyond their ability. And as you continue to read, you find out that they weren't even asked. But they were looking around and they noticed a need. They noticed a need. And this is your solution. If you find that you're giving less and less the more and more you make, stop waiting for somebody to say, your money could make a difference. Open your eyes, look around. You will never run out of opportunities to do amazing things for God. Now let me close in this fashion. In 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 17. Before I say that, absolutely crucial. This was never about trading your happiness for obeying God. This whole sermon was not about you trading your happiness for serving God. What it is about is serving God first and then allowing Him to give us our happiness. It was never, you're not giving up, you're just changing the order of things. Serve God first, get blessed later. Instead of getting blessed and then God, when I'm really, 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 really blessed, then I'll give to you. And I'll tell you what, like I mentioned early on, without God, it is nearly impossible for wealthy people to truly be in a tight relationship with Him because we trust our money so much. So right now, I want to give you an opportunity to put your faith and your trust in the one who owns, created everything. I'd like you to bow your heads, and I want to give you an opportunity right now to accept Christ as your Savior. Because again, this passage says that you guys will not be able to do this on your own. Satan has power in this world. You need power in your hands. And this comes from the power of the Holy Spirit that you are given when you accept Christ. So with your heads bowed, let me offer you a word of prayer. And if you'd like to say this prayer in your own heart and accept Christ for the very first time, if you do this, be sure and mark it on the back of that care card because we would love to find out about that, give you a call, see if you need any kind of assistance in this incredible new experience. But pray with me. Father God, there are people in this room who have never trusted you before. And maybe out of this message, Father, you convince them that you are the one who has the power. It doesn't matter how much stuff they have. Their stuff is a dead end. Lord, right now I would ask every person in this room who has never done this to simply say these words, Lord, I have been led astray, and I was wrong, and I have dishonored you. And from here out, I want to live by your rules, live by your power, And that's only possible by giving myself, allowing your son to take my punishment, allowing Jesus Christ to take my punishment for me. And when we accept Jesus Christ, his offer to take our punishment for us, we are saved and he becomes our Savior. Lord, thank you so much for the power you have to make everything possible. In this world where so many things are screwy, you have the ultimate power and your will be done. Father God, thank you so much. In your son's name I pray. Amen. Again, if you have accepted Christ for the very first time, put that on your care card. Let us know. We won't harass you, anything like that. But that is an incredible step to take because you're on the way then. You're definitely on the way.
Thank you. Thank you, Pastor Jerry, for that incredible message that you gave today. Yeah, you bet. It's great to have agreement in that. Really unique and important Sunday coming up. And Jerry alluded to it in his message, and it's called Porn Sunday. Porn Sunday. And it's not Super Bowl Sunday. It is the Sunday in which the Super Bowl is going to be played, okay? But it's not Super Bowl Sunday, it's Porn Sunday. And we've never really just hit this head on the way we're going to hit it head on. The first Sunday of February. And this is a Sunday that can actually save many of you a whole bundle of heartache down the line someday. So we really encourage all of you to be here. It's going to be a great time to just understand a lot more about this. We actually have video footage of interviews of professional football players. They're going to be on screen here with us talking about this very subject that the Bible has a lot to say on, but because it's like the elephant in the room. We talk about everything, but boy, in day-to-day life, this is a huge issue for many, many people. So we're going to hit this head on. We're not going to beat people up. We're going to certainly talk about this. There's a lot of quiet, silent grieving going on in people's hearts because they've been on the other side of someone dealing with stuff like this in their life. So come back. This is a place where we get love right together. And this is a great Sunday for that. So when we're done with this series, we're going to hit Porn Sunday for Sunday of February. Hopefully there's going to be a slide. So thank you, campuses, and go ahead with the rest of what you need to do.